Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right. Hey again, everybody. Thanks for being with us for another week here on the Yolitics podcast. Jason and Jason with you once again. Before we even get started here, I just want to say we got a really nice message the other day from a guy named Kim on Instagram who said that he set out on a road trip with his sister. It sounded like it was a long one, and they needed something to kind of pass the miles. And so he pulled up our most recent podcast with the CEO of Southwest Airlines. He actually happens to work for Southwest Airlines, and says that he learned some things while he was traveling there, really enjoyed the podcast, and just wanted to give him a shout out for having a listen and encouraging others to do the same. It's a great idea, Jason, you know, as we get into that time of the year when you're out and about and on the road and, you know, you got to pass, you know, 8-10 hours. You got the family in the car.
Yeah.
This is a good thing to listen to.
Yeah, it is.
And everybody can agree on Yolitics.
Who can't? Come on. It is the unofficial podcast of Texas. Kim, thank you very much for downloading that episode. We appreciate that. And speaking of travel, Wheeler, I doubt you've gotten my Christmas gift yet, but I'll give you a few hints. You can go ahead and you can get me an airline gift card. So I can do some of these cool trips that my friends are taking, like our guest today on our podcast.
I think it's going to take more than just my gift if you plan on doing the trip that we're talking about today. So yeah, let's dive into that. First of all, what are you having today?
I got this one strictly on his name, Daddy's Juice Box.
Oh,
IPA. Okay. So this is like one of those like those little kids juice boxes, like a Capri-Sun type. Pouches. This is a double IPA. It's from True Vine Brewing. It's in Tyler, Texas. I don't do a lot of IPAs, especially double IPAs, so I can't really, compare it. But let's see what it's like.
That's going to be double trouble if you don't do a lot of IPAs. I have a feeling. Let's just see what that first face is like here over the Zoom call.
It's like a good Christmas beer. It's, you know, double IPAs. Everyone listening to it who drinks double IPAs, like, yeah, you idiot. It's like a heavy, rich beer. But yeah, it's not bad. You know, when it's cold outside, that's the beer I'd like to have.
I'm having one today from Hop Fusion Ale Works out of Fort Worth, and I am having a Feisty Blonde today.
Nice. I've had that. That is a good one.
And it says, "This ain't your mama's blonde," down at the bottom. So it sounds like it could be a goodie.
That could be trouble, too.
So you were referring to this trip.
Yeah, so, you know, our guest, I've been a longtime fan of this guy even before I got here, and this is a former colleague of ours who retired a few years back. His name is...
After 41 years at the station.
Not just...
Nobody lasts
that long. No, but not just 41 years. This guy did everything and won everything there is in broadcast journalism. His name is Byron Harris. He was a veteran reporter. I think he worked in Oklahoma City before he moved to WFAA in Dallas for a long time. He retired in 2015. It's hard to believe it's been 6 years.
And when you say that he was not just, you know, another one in the room, this guy is, I think he is or was the most decorated reporter in the country award-wise. And I don't mean these, you know, piddly local awards. We're talking about national awards. This guy had national recognition for his investigative work and all of the things that he uncovered over the years. And I mean, they just kept coming. He didn't have just like one of these and one of those. He has like this trophy case that is just filled. And so he is a journalist at heart. And as Jason said, he retired back in 2015. But you never stop when you're that good. You don't ever stop, you know, being a journalist. And so recently he went on, you know, what should have been this, you know, vacation trip of a lifetime kind of thing. And now he's on his way back home and it's going to be a long journey home. And so we're doing a sort of debrief while he's en route.
Byron, we're super stoked you could join us. Tell us where you are right now, man.
We have just left the Antarctic Peninsula and are headed back to Tierra del Fuego from Antarctica. We are in the Drake Passage, which is one of the stormiest bodies of water in the world. It's not super stormy right now. We're in about 15-foot seas, and the wind is about 50 miles an hour.
That sounds super stormy, though, Byron. But I guess everything's relative down there, and this ship is different than most ships.
Into the swell. It was invented in the North Sea by people who had to service oil rigs in that heavy weather a lot. So it's very cool. Plus, the ship is stabilized. It has little underwater wings that that absorb some of the swells.
So, Byron, for our listeners who haven't been to where you are right now, the Drake Passage is the southern tip of South America. It's where the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans meet. If I go out, you know, somewhere in Texas and, you know, there's, 18 inch swells, I get seasick. Are you wearing magnets on your wrists? Or are you taking any medicine or anything to handle this?
No, I didn't have any trouble coming down. So, and I'm not right now. The oceanographer was saying this morning that if you don't get seasick, you're not, what he said was people are genetically predisposed to get seasick, and I guess I'm not.
So you're on the National Geographic Endurance ship right now, and this is with Lindblad Expeditions. For most people have never even heard of this, but this it's an extraordinary ship, and I just want to know, how did you get on this? How did you get on this ship and get on this journey down to Antarctica, and how long did you spend down there?
We were there about a week. I got onto it. I just decided that I wanted to go to Antarctica, and this is pretty much the maiden voyage for this ship. It had a couple of shakedown cruises, but not with a lot of people on board. Although it's a very small ship anyway, there's only 111 guests on this ship, and the good aspect of having so few people is there is a governing council of Antarctica, which limits the number of people who can go ashore at once because they don't want to disturb the wildlife or the environment. So being a small ship, we can pretty much go whenever we want. The limiting factors are heavy seas and ice, because you get off the ship has a special kind of landing area where they deploy Zodiac rubber boats, and you put all kinds of heavy clothing and waterproof clothing on. You get in these Polaris or Zodiac boats, and you go ashore and you look at the wildlife, and that's pretty much what you do. But there's all these naturalists on board who are incredibly well-educated. Most of them have master's degrees, and they just love nature, and they care a lot about the climate. So when I heard about this trip, when it was happening, and this was probably going to be the first voyage of this unique ship, I decided, hey, I'm going to go for it. So I did.
And Byron, for our listeners who might be watching morning TV in the United States, they've probably seen some of this from the Good Morning America crew that's also on board your ship there. You said you just wanted to go to Antarctica. I'm super envious you got to take this trip. Tell me what you expected to see when you got down there and what you actually saw when you got down there.
I didn't really know what to expect. I figured I'd see a lot of penguins, and I have seen hundreds of thousands of penguins. excuse me, and yesterday we saw a blue whale, which is very rare. It's the largest animal on the planet. It's 100 feet long. It weighs 150 tons. And we encountered one that was kind of swimming right next to the ship. So we tracked it for, I would say, an hour. And I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't know the various species of penguins. I didn't know the various species of birds, petrels, cormorants, albatrosses. So I didn't know. I figured I couldn't go wrong. I was going to learn a lot, and I have.
Byron, this is your first trip down there, but were signs of climate change obvious to you once they were pointed out?
No, I'd have to say no. I can't tell. I mean, Joe, our oceanographer, points out that Antarctica is the fastest warming continent and has warmed, I think, about 14 degrees Fahrenheit in the last 30 years. Average temperature. So
that's stunning when you think about it.
Antarctica also holds 72% of the world's fresh water, which is stunning. Also, you don't get much, you know, the maps that we're all used to looking at for years don't really show you how big it is. It's huge, Antarctica. It always seems to be a little tiny white chunk on the bottom of a globe, but it's really, most globes don't convey the huge size of this continent. I think it's the size of India and Australia put together.
Okay, so Byron, we were talking about how, you know, you're this, you know, consummate journalist, even though you're retired and you're out there on this trip to see these amazing things. There you go, you know, pulling out the camera and the microphone. And you actually spoke with Sven Lindblad, who is known the world over. He's with Lindblad Expeditions. They're the ones that put this whole thing on. And he is an explorer. He's been around this stuff forever. And you asked him what I thought was an interesting question about, can you actually see climate change occurring when you're in Antarctica? Does it happen right in front of your face?
You don't so much see the change in an overt kind of way. For example, you'll see where we were yesterday on Paulet Island. That used to be full of Adelie penguins. That's a species that likes colder weather. Those species are no longer there in great numbers, and they've been taken over by Gentoo, who are comfortable with warmer water. This year, for example, we're seeing a lot of snow early in the season here now, and that's a factor of warming weather. You get more snow, more precipitation as a consequence of that. But you see the sheer size of what's out there. You can't necessarily see the change per se. I mean, you need satellite photographs, then you can see change. You know, areas where there were glaciers that are no longer there, they've broken off. But from ground level, it's hard to actually see it. Everything is so big, right? But there's no question, the scientists will tell you, the statistics will tell you, it's getting warmer, more ice is breaking off. You know, there was an iceberg that broke off not too long ago that was larger than Rhode Island. And this is happening more and more, and it's really, really concerning, because if the Antarctic would melt, you'd have sea level rise of somewhere between 250 and 300 feet globally.
There's a lot that he said there just in that short bit, and it really does give you some perspective. I think that one thing that might stand out to people, they hear that it's snowing in Antarctica and that indicates warming there. It's usually very dry there, though, and things are changing.
Yes, it doesn't snow. It snowed on the ship last night. It doesn't snow a lot, but Antarctica really is a desert. It's very dry. You have all the ice that's been here for millennia, but in terms of snowfall, it doesn't really snow very often. What he was saying is that since the air is warmer and it can hold more moisture, therefore that moisture is available to make snow when it occurs.
So Byron, you're just now on the journey. You're on the journey back to Argentina there in South America. You just wrapped up this trip. I'm sure that you're still kind of, you know, processing it. Most people will never get the chance to get down to Antarctica. And I just wondered if you might describe your emotions from being there. I mean, it's such a majestic place. It's this, you know, mythical place almost to so many people. But at the same time, you know what is happening to it just from the science. You know what's happening to that place.
The emotion that you feel is generated by how pristine it is. There's absolutely nobody here. I mean, you know that, but there's nobody here. You don't see anything except animals and white, and it's stunningly clean. The air is so you see a white cloud that glimmers on the horizon against the blue sky, and that doesn't happen where we live in Dallas. So those are some of the emotions. And also, you learn so much about nature in terms of how a penguin, even an adult penguin, it takes 2 months to hatch an egg. And these birds will sit on the egg for 2 months. The husband always does it, and the wife goes out because she sits on the egg for a while, but then the husband takes over. And with the nest penguin, the gestation period is even longer. It takes 5 months for the maybe longer, 5 months at least for the egg to hatch. And so these animals are driven by survival. Now, one other thing I got to tell you, we have on the ship a man who actually traversed Antarctica with four other guys in 1989, and they saw a documentary that they made on his trip, about his trip, and every day was a crisis for them. They had the food was a crisis, their dogs were dying. One member of the party died, and he was actually here to talk to us. So it's been a stunning experience.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you asked Mr. Lindblad, Sven Lindblad, a few questions, Lindblad, and you also asked him whether he saw himself as a disciple of Earth. And here's what he told you.
Well, first of all, I believe that, well, our job is to show people wonder, and as a consequence of that, make them develop a reverence. Hopefully they develop a reverence and appreciation for that. And then it allows us to have a conversation about the challenge that we as human beings face as it relates to our relationship with the natural world, which is really problematic, right? We're doing it a lot of damage. We're overfishing it. We're diminishing our freshwater resources. We're cutting down our forests. We're warming the planet. This is not a great recipe for success. So I view every single person that we take to places like the Antarctic as potential disciples for us to get our heads straight and to develop a different relationship with our planet.
So you talk about, Byron, the air is so clear, the sky is so blue, and there's no one around, so it's this untouched land. I'm curious, you're a very well-traveled person. Has this trip to the seventh continent, has this changed you in any way?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, you start to realize it. I will start to realize it when I get back, really, and start looking at all the photographs that I took and the video that I took. And then you kind of get into when you're in the editing process, you get back into the photograph and you actually begin to relive what you were going through at that time. And that's usually the cathartic experience for me. Is this, you know, I've been to Mongolia, which was also stunning because there aren't very many people there. But I'd say those are the, and on the other hand, I've also been to India, which is stunning because there are so many people there. There's 1.2 billion people in India, and it's like a punch in the nose. This is more like a caress of a clean, beautiful breeze.
Byron, I want to ask you this because you're a storyteller for a living and an investigative journalist at that, which those are the complex stories. They're hard to tell. I will brag on you for just a moment here, though, because we worked in a newsroom with you and it was a heady experience just sharing the room. This guy has won 6 DuPont Columbia Awards, 2 Peabody Awards, 4 Edward R. Murrows. Nobody does that. Nobody racks up hardware like that. So you've been a storyteller your whole life, a great storyteller at that. And I'm wondering how you tell this story, how we tell this story to make people understand what's happening. There's been so many fights over, you know, whether global, you know, warming or climate change is happening. It's become such a political football in a lot of cases. How do you make people care about something that's happening so gradually and seems so far off? And you know, when you even go to Antarctica and you can't see it yourself, how do we make people care about it?
I don't have a good answer for that. It would just, when you're here and you realize what a special place this is, you want to do everything you can to protect it. I guess obviously not everybody's going to be able to come down here, but you can try to modify your behavior when you get back home and make sure you watch how much plastic. This is an incredibly environmentally conscious ship. There's no plastic on board. You use reusable water bottles that are metal. You every time you go ashore, you wash your boots, and when you come back, you wash your boots. So there's no you don't take any contamination from the ship onto the shore. Obviously, what does that mean to people living in Dallas, Texas? Well, it means that all this pristine stuff could go away, and it would be we would have no more pristine places in the world. I guess that's the message.
And I'll tell you what, if that pristine place goes away, since it's locking up this huge percentage of this world's fresh water supply, there'll be a good chunk of Texas that would be underwater if all of it melted down there. Byron, you mentioned some of the places you've been to. You've had some very cool trips. I've lived vicariously through your Facebook feed. And I'm just curious, how do you top this? Where do you go after this?
I don't know. Well, I'd like you meet so many people on a ship like this who are environmentally concerned and have been to places you haven't been. So I'd say the Galapagos would be next for me. I'd like to see that nature there.
And Byron, the Galapagos is like Antarctica in the sense that it's really kind of unspoiled. What are you going to do differently after seeing Antarctica and after maybe planning a trip to the Galapagos?
I'd say watch what I eat. Watch how much garbage you produce. For instance, when I say watch what you eat, you're thinking, what does that mean? Well, here's what it means. This ocean that I'm in right now produces krill, which is a little 2-inch shrimp-like organism that grows on phytoplankton that starts to bloom naturally in Antarctica as the summer progresses. But what we're doing on the planet right now is we are harvesting more and more krill every year. We grind it up and we make fish food out of it and cattle feed. And so I might be here on out I don't know what you guys did, but during COVID, I became a little more vegetarian than I used to be. I eat less meat now, just because I was doing the cooking every day and got into vegetables. But so what happens when these krill get eradicated? A whale eats, a blue whale eats between 1% and 3% of its body weight in krill every day. So if when krill goes away, it's not only going to kill the food source for whales, but also penguins and birds, seabirds. A penguin is a seabird, but I'm thinking petrels and albatrosses. So I think I'm going to modify my diet more, eat less stuff that takes, that either produces greenhouse gases or uses a lot of greenhouse gas to make. So that's one thing.
Yeah, we're definitely overfishing the oceans for sure. Byron, last thing from me. I was looking at the Lindblad expeditions because, like I said, I've been stalking your Facebook page and thinking, OK, I want to go there. And I saw that the cheapest journey that they have to Antarctica is $15,080. It's for 14 days. And, you know, to save my pennies, maybe one of these days I'll start making Jason Whiteley money and this will be no big deal. Tell me, though, you know, it's a lot of money, of course, but worth it if you can scrape together enough money?
Oh, absolutely. And these guys do it the best, I've discovered. You come here and they have Arctic clothing that you get to keep. Those orange coats, a parka underneath that. You get a dry bag to carry your photographic gear in. They think of everything. And there's at the peak of the season, there's as many as 40 ships around Antarctica, all of which tell the people, their guests, that they're going to go to Antarctica. But most of those ships never stop anywhere. They never go ashore. They don't have this incredible knowledge that's here. This ship is so unbelievable. There's, you can follow your journey every day on maps that are everywhere, huge kind of iPad-like things where you can see the wind speed, where you are, where you were yesterday. It's an unbelievable ship, and I think very unique in that regard. More thing I got to tell you. Yesterday, we did a polar plunge where you actually jump into the Antarctic Sea.
What?
Yeah. And it,
now, were
it
you,
is,
do you wear anything for that, Byron?
No, I wore a bathing suit, and about half the guests on the ship did it. And they give you a little patch that says, I did a polar plunge, which really is something. I mean, it's quite shocking when you dive into the water and feel the water is about 28 degrees.
Jeez.
Byron, I can't get into a cold shower in Texas. I can't imagine what that was like. How long were you in the water?
Seconds. You jump in and they pull you out right away.
How long did it take you to recover after that?
Oh, probably an hour. Yeah. Your feet get cold, your hands get cold, and I don't know, it kind of just systemic numbness settles all over you. You're just kind of vegged out for about an hour.
But you can say you did it and you've got their certificate to prove it.
Yeah, they give you a little patch, actually, that says I made the polar plunge.
Wow. Byron, it sounds like a heck of a trip, man. I'm glad that the line worked out where you could call in today because it's fascinating to hear. And that's the
absolutely
one place that's on my bucket list, probably the top of my bucket list that I have not been to. I would love to be able to go to.
Well,
we are envious.
Yeah, I mean,
here in Texas.
Yeah, come over. I'll show you the video and bore you to death. Because I miss you guys.
You know, normally, you know, we can see our friends' vacations on Instagram or on Facebook. I'd totally go back over to Byron's house to watch this stuff.
I didn't tell you, but, you know, you started this off by asking me if I had gotten your Christmas gift yet.
Yeah.
And said that I could contribute to your Christmas present by, you know, building sort of a vacation fund for you so that you could do something like this one day.
Oh, yeah, man.
And I hate to break the surprise early, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to come by and I'm going to pick you up for your Christmas gift. And we are going to take a trip over to Byron's house, and you're going to get to live vicariously looking through all his videos. It's going to be great.
I'm totally game for that, man. But you know what, Byron? Here's the thing about Byron. He's curious and inquisitive, and he's never lost that passion and that spark. And that's what, you know, if anyone does any job for 41 years, it may become monotonous or something like that. Not for Byron. After he left, he became a writer. He does a lot of reports still for WFAA. I can't wait to see what this one's going to become, this trip down to Antarctica, because he's going at it really with an independent eye. He's not a scientist. Going in obviously with no mind made up. So I'm really curious to see what it's going to look like at the end.
I think that makes you live longer too, to keep on going with that kind of attitude, or it at least makes you live better. And I will say that since Byron has left us, it's been 6 years since he left the station where we work. And I see this guy, he hasn't aged a day. You talk to him, he is still like totally into stuff, like you say. And it's like he's the role model. You know, that's what I want to be one of these days when I can finally retire. That's exactly how I want to do it.
You should check with him and see what his moisturizing routine is, because you ought to pick it up if you can for the new year.
I could probably use whatever secrets Byron can pass along about sort of preserving yourself in place. But, you know, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. This is the furthest away guest we've ever had by far.
Easily.
We've never registered a listener. I think we've talked about this on Antarctica. We've registered one on every other continent, but I'm not sure that it registers that way. So, but, you know, we sure got close here with this guest this time. We should have called him while he was actually standing on the ice. But
well, we should have, when you say register this for our listeners, we can see what country people are listening from. And we've had someone listen from the six other continents. We should have had him download an episode while he was there on the ice shelf or whatever you want to call it. But just the fact that phone call came through in the Drake Passage, satellite phone call, whatever it was, it's unbelievable that the technology can connect us like that.
And it was great quality too, but you could tell that there was something about it. You could hear it in the audio almost. And I loved it. It sounds like he's like halfway on the way to the moon. You know, he's just way out there, and he might as well have been.
Yeah.
We really hope that you enjoyed, this episode. We sure did. You know, if you've got friends or family who are going to be traveling and stuck on airplanes or in crowded airports or on the roads, first of all, travel safe and tell them to do so as well. And tell them to download the Yolitics podcast. This will give them at least something to listen to, and they can binge listen. We've got a gazillion episodes now, so this one might be a good one, though.
We're back next week, though, too. You're like wishing off everyone for the rest of the year, man.
Oh, no, because I know how this works, Jason. I think we're going to be the last ones working, you know. As we get into these next several days, I'm telling you, like, you start commuting to work, and you're like, you're really happy at first because you go, wow, the traffic is great today. And then you start to get kind of sad thinking, but wait, that means everybody else is off right now, and they're already like pursuing life and holiday plans. And here I am still, you know, punching in and going into the office. So that's why I'm putting it out there, because I know that a lot of people are sort of in cruise control now.
Story of our life, Wheeler. Story of our life. That does it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And if you're looking for something to do on that road trip, if you don't want to play Spotify constantly, do like Wheeler said, download Yolitics, subscribe to us. We're going to be programming through the holidays, so you can listen to and fro wherever you're heading for the holidays. We'll talk to you next week.